have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
It's a big, wide, wonderful world you live in. When you're in love, you're a master of all you survey. You're a gay Santa Claus. There's a brave new star-spangled sky above you. When you're in love, you're a hero, the Nero Apollo, the Wizard of Oz. You've a kingdom, power and glory. The old, old, oldest of stories is new, true. You've built your Rome in just one day. Life is mystic, the midsummer's night you live in, the Turkish delight, you're in heaven. That's swell when you're really in love. A kingdom, power and glory. The old, old, oldest of stories is new, true. You've built your Rome in just one day. Life is mystic, the midsummer's night you live in, but Turkish delight, you're in heaven. It's well when you're really in love.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. We just listened to the wonderful singing voice of Buddy Clark. Unfortunately, shortly after recording this song, which was one of the most popular in our nation, Buddy was in a private plane flying to a Los Angeles sporting event. The craft ran out of gas and Buddy was tragically killed. He was only 37, and he was at the top of his career. Tonight, we're going to listen to two old-time radio gems. We'll begin with a great episode of Suspense and conclude with an equally wonderful version of The Whistler. Remember, if you go to your Wi-Fi devices, you can tune in to on Google and look for Radio Masterpieces. Kevin Crutchfield, the wonderful editor of my shows, has made it possible for you to listen to about 20 hours of my past programs. While you're at the Valley103.wim website, if you're able, don't forget to hit the donation button to keep this great little station on the air. Thank you so much for listening, and now let's enjoy our two great shows.
I didn't want to hurt him. I didn't want to hurt him, but I couldn't do it while he lay there sleeping so peacefully. He had to be awake when it happened. He had to be awake. Bob? Bob?
Hmm?
Bob, get up. Get up.
What's the matter? I haven't...
We have an audition.
What time is it?
20 minutes to 11.
An audition in the middle of the night?
There's a club over on 8th Street needs a dance team. Tabor just phoned me. Said to get over there right away.
I didn't hear any phone.
You were asleep.
Usually wakes me. All right. I'll get dressed. I suppose they want us to go on tonight. I'm not going to be much good. I think it could wait till morning. Anyway.
That was step number one. While he was dressing, I stepped out to the payphone in the hall. I could hear him in the bathroom. I looked at the watch. I didn't have to rush. I had time, enough time.
Yes?
Hello, Jimmy.
Was that you, Edith?
Yes. Jimmy, we're battling again. I think this time it's the end. He's going to leave me.
No, that's silly. Is he there now?
Yes.
Well, put him on. I'll talk to him.
Oh, he's in the bathroom. He wouldn't come to the phone for me anyway. Perhaps it's best we split up. I don't know.
No. Well, you're the best thing that ever happened to that kid brother of mine, and I won't let him do anything he'll be sorry for. Suppose I drop up there now and see him.
I don't know, Jimmy.
I'll be right over, kid. You just sit tight. Leave it to me. I've been managing that spoiled little brat for years. I'll be right up there.
Yes, Jimmy. Step number two. The big brother was going to step over and straighten everything out. I looked at the watch again. It was 10:45. He'd get there at 11. Just the time. Just the right time.
All right. Are we going or aren't we?
Oh, you got ready quickly.
Who was that on the phone?
Wrong number.
Yeah? Did you tell a wrong number? You couldn't go out with them tonight?
I said it was a wrong number.
Yeah, I heard you.
You don't believe me?
You're going to get ready to go out or aren't you?
I didn't like to have it that way, but that was how it had to be. Violent, angry. Like there'd been an argument. That was how it was going to have to look. He turned his back to me and started lifting our costumes into a little suitcase. I slid the knife into my hand. Cold, cold. Even the wood handle was cold. What would the steel feel like to Bob? I came very close to him. He started to turn.
Where's your other...
And I jumped forward quickly and lost the knife somewhere in his throat. I hadn't meant to let the knife slip out of my hand that way. I stood quietly until he stopped writhing. Then I reached down and lifted the knife up and wiped the handle off. I had to do that. Then I dropped it again. For a moment, I couldn't take my eyes off it. I was fascinated by it. Then I snapped awake. I looked around the room. I don't know what for. I'd taken care of everything, but I looked anyway. And then I saw it. The little pocket watch that George had loaned me for the timing, because everything had to be timed right, just right. I must have put it down there when I did it. I slipped it into my handbag, put on my hat and coat. It was 10:50. That was when he died. 10:50. It was 10:50 when I slipped out of the apartment. The timing had to be right, just right. That was when I'd killed him. 10:50. I had to get away quickly now. It had to be the back stairs. I went down them as quickly as I could, my heart beating wildly. If anyone saw me, it was the end. I'd die in the chair for what I'd...
Please, please, come. That's where we go down, Dingy. There's the elevator. Pinky wants to go down the stairs.
Oh, no.
Yes, Pinky? Oh, the elevator. Very well, Pinky, the elevator it will be. Pinky should have said so the first time. Come along, Pinky.
I was trembling violently when I hit the street. Nobody had seen me. Nobody had seen me. I lost myself in the Broadway crowds. But all of a sudden, I didn't want lights. I wanted quiet and shadows. I cut across to park. I passed the apartment house once. There was no one around. I came back and dove down the stairway marked service entrance. I walked through the cellar.
Edith, here, over here.
Oh, George.
Did anyone see you come in?
No one. I'm sure no one did. Oh,
shh,
George.
Come on, up the stairs here. I thought we might use a service elevator, but it's too risky. It's only one flight up. Steady now. Corridor's clear. Come on. There, it's all over. It's all over, dear.
Oh, George, hold me. I'm shivering so.
Well, it's all over, dear. It's all over now.
There were no more things to do now. No more steps to take cautiously, carefully. I was on the top of the ladder now, and I could reach out and pluck the stars right out of the sky. I had to stay up there. I had to stay up there. I wasn't nervous at all, Val. You'd have thought I'd been doing that sort of thing all my life.
Oh, you're wonderful, Edith.
All I remember is the blood on the carpet. It'll have to be cleaned, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We will be happy now, won't we, George?
Oh, that will be the police.
Oh, I'd forgotten. I was thinking it was all over.
It's just this little more. Do you feel up to it?
Oh, I'm all right, dear. I'll be fine. You'll see. I won't throw it all away now. Open the door.
Ms. Reed?
Yes?
We're from the police department, Ms. Reed.
The police department? What?
Well, Ms. Reed, your husband's had an accident.
Bob? Tell me!
He's been stabbed, ma'am. He's dead.
Bob? What?
We'd like to have you come down to headquarters to identify him. And...
Bob? Oh, no! Oh, no, no, no! I cried then. It was sort of a release. I was tired and lost all of a sudden, and I cried real tears. I knew they would be impressed. I was crying because I was tired, and they would think I was crying because of Bob. And that was good. That was good. I thought we might go downtown in a police car. Instead, they had a cab waiting, and they were considerate, and they drove slowly. Only they drove slowly along Broadway, and I couldn't ask them not to. And I had to close my eyes to keep out the light, to hold down the memories. And that was good, too. They thought the pain I was having was grief over Bob.
He's in here, this door here. On the table here.
Just a lump under a white sheet. Just a long lump under a white sheet, all that was left of Bob. All that was left of the man who'd been my husband.
I'll have to take the sheet off his face now, Miss Reed.
Steady.
This your husband?
Yes. Yes, that's Bob.
Steady.
That'll be all in here. You'll come with me. You'll come in here.
What?
It'll only be for a moment, I'm sure. This is Lieutenant Milgram in charge of the case. This is Miss Reed.
Oh, Miss Reed. Now, won't you sit over here?
Thank you.
I know you must be under a terrific strain, and I won't keep you any longer than I have to, Mrs. Reed. I'll make things as easy for you as I can.
And this is George Lee.
How do you do, Mr. Lee?
How do you do? We've all been terribly shocked by this.
Yes.
Who would want to kill Bob? He had no enemies. Was it robbery or...
No, I'm afraid it was no robbery.
But then what?
You went out tonight.
Yes.
Early?
Yes, at about 7. I don't know the exact time. Close to 7. The doorman would know.
As we asked him, he said 7. When did you return to your apartment?
I hadn't been home all night.
Where were you?
Well, she was at my place. You must know that. Your men picked us up there.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yes, she was with me. Oh, on business, I assure you. Mr. and Mrs. Reed were two of my dearest friends. I'm a dance director. I was working with them on a routine.
He had wanted me to say I'd been in another man's apartment. He had wanted me to come right out and say it. Cops thought it was unnatural to be too good. They became suspicious if you were too good. There was a leaky water faucet that kept dripping somewhere in the room.
And you stayed in the apartment till now?
Yes, of course.
I see. What time did you get to Mr. Lee's apartment?
About 7:15, I guess.
Doorman up there?
Yes.
Suppose he saw you go in?
Yes.
Oh, look, Inspector.
Lieutenant.
I'm sorry, Lieutenant. You're not thinking that Edith here could have had anything to do with this horrible thing.
I didn't say so, did I?
Well, I can assure you that Mrs. Reed did not stir from my apartment all evening.
Well, before you left your own place, Mrs. Reed, you asked a neighbor to go into your apartment at 11 o'clock and wake your husband up, didn't you?
Yes. Bob was supposed to come with me to Mr. Lee's, but he had a headache and said he would lie down for a while, try to sleep it off and join us later. I asked Mrs. Ryan to drop in on him at 11 and wake him.
Uh-huh.
I knew he would sleep it out if I left him alone, and I did want to get this routine finished.
I see.
Mrs. Ryan didn't stab him.
No, Mrs. Ryan didn't stab him. She went in at 11, as you told her, and she found Mr. Reed lying on the rug and someone standing over him with a knife in his hand.
Who?
What?
Who?
Joe. Joe, ask one of the boys to ring in,
Yes, sir.
The timing had been perfect. Everything had gone well. I was aware that I wasn't shivering anymore. I was complete master of myself now. I had nothing to be afraid of now. Why, he'd even picked up the knife.
Edith! Oh, Edith, thank heaven.
Jimmy, what?
Edith, will you tell these guys what's what? They seem to be in some kind of a fog. They think I killed Bob. I don't know what's happening to me, but...
Easy.
You don't mean he...
Yes, he's the fellow Mrs. Ryan found with a knife in his hand, his own hunting knife.
Oh, no, no, that's impossible. Bob was his brother. Jimmy, I know you didn't do it.
Well, of course I didn't do it. Tell him about the quarrel. Tell him about the phone call.
About the quarrel? The phone call?
Yeah, tell him that I was sort of a misfix-it for you two when things got out of hand. Tell him how I felt about Bob and you.
What quarrel, Jimmy? What phone call?
What quarrel? Well, the one you had with tonight with Bob.
I?
What's the matter? Tell him about calling me up.
Jimmy, what are you talking about?
What am I talking about? You called me tonight from the apartment and said you and Bob were splitting up and... Well, why are you shaking your head?
I just don't know what you're talking about, Jimmy. Bob and I didn't quarrel. I didn't call anyone.
What time did the call come?
Oh, about 10:45, and around that, I said I'd be over and try and straighten things out.
Mrs. Reed was with you at the time?
What? Well, yes, certainly.
Did you make any calls?
No, none.
Edith, for heaven's sake!
Was anybody with you when you got the call?
No, I was in bed.
It was your knife, wasn't it, Mac?
Oh, yes, but I don't know how it got to Bob's apartment. It was there when I got there. Bob was dead when I arrived.
You quarreled with your brother on occasion, didn't you?
Not quarrel. No, I was the older brother. I had to straighten him out once or twice.
Mrs. Ryan says you often quarreled with him.
Oh, they weren't quarrels. Edith, she used to call up when things went wrong, and I'd hustle over and help out. I had a lot of influence with Bob. I tell you, Edith, you're kidding with me. Tell him how I felt about Bob. Go on, tell him.
You killed him. You killed him!
Edith!
I told you I loved him. I told you that the last time you asked me to leave him and go with you. I told you that the last time and the time before that and the time before that.
Edith, you...
You mean he and your husband quarreled over you?
Yes.
Edith, you... Why, you don't know what you're saying.
You had to kill him. Love you. I hate you. I hate you.
What?
I'm sorry, hating you.
She's crazy. You're lying.
Take him away.
Edith!
I did it well. I did it superbly. I was sorry for Jimmy, but he didn't count, really. It was him or me. I was after happiness, and nobody was going to stand in my way. Nobody. Nobody. They drove me home in a police car. George went home alone. I suddenly remembered I hadn't a chance to give him back his watch. It was a foolish little thought to have now.
The night air will make you feel better. Cool, you know.
Yes.
Your husband was a fairly wealthy man, wasn't he?
I don't know. Yes, I suppose he was.
Didn't use much of it, did he?
I...
Why?
Well, he wanted to be a great dancer. Show business was in his blood.
Oh?
He said he was going to become as great as Astaire or Bulger or Kelly. Oh. And he was going to do it the way they did it, the hard way. He wasn't going to buy success. He insisted we live on our club earnings and ignore the other...
I see. Well, you'll be quite a wealthy woman now.
I don't want to think about it.
Here we are, Chief.
Well, good night, Mrs. Reed. Oh, it's almost 2:00. Good morning, Mrs. Reed.
Good morning.
Want me to see you in?
No, I'll be all right. Thank you for everything.
Oh, good evening, ma'am.
Hello, Joseph. 6, please.
I'm sorry
Thank
about
you,
but
Joseph.
You're not going to sleep up there, are you?
Yes, Joseph. There's nothing to be afraid of. When you love someone the way I love Bob, it...
Oh, yeah, I understand, ma'am. You're right. Oh, here we are, ma'am.
Thank you, Joseph.
Thank you.
I stood in the doorway for a moment before I snapped on the light. I thought I could smell the death in the air. They do in novels. But there was nothing. Nothing. I snapped the light on and closed the door. The police had cleaned the room nicely. There was only the spot on the rug. Only the blood on the rug. There was nothing here to be afraid of. No voices, no ghosts, nothing. I was tired. I needed sleep badly. I went into the bedroom and locked the door and tried to sleep. Can you be so tired that you can't sleep? Can't even force an eyelid down over your eye? Can you be that tired? And the blackness and the quiet, they seem to be smothering me. And then I heard it. At first, I didn't know what it was. I wasn't frightened. I just didn't know what it was. George's watch, of course. The little pocket watch he'd loaned me in my handbag on the bedside table. How silly. They sound so loud in an empty room at night. I snapped on the light. It wasn't that I was afraid. There was nothing to be afraid of, not really. But suddenly I was just a lonely little girl. I didn't want quiet now. I wanted to hear voices, happy sounds, happy noises. I wanted George. I needed to be with him. I needed terribly to be with him now.
Yes?
George?
Oh, Edith, what's the matter?
I forgot to give you back your watch.
Oh, Edith, don't be silly at a time like
this. I know it. It isn't really that.
Well, what is it?
I've got to see you. I'm coming over.
No, wait. At this hour, it's silly, Edith. It's dangerous.
I can't help it, darling. I've got to see you.
Oh, wait a minute. Not here. There's a little place on 7th Avenue, an all-night lunch place near 40th. Dillard's, I think it is.
Right away.
All right.
The place looked empty when I got there, only a fat little man at the counter slicing some kind of meat. And then I saw George at the back at one of the few tables in the place. I ran back. Dearest.
Edith, no. It's not smart.
I just want you to hold me. Hold me for a moment. I need you so much.
Edith, please, the waiter.
Oh.
Stop trembling. You're trembling.
Yeah, let it be, folks.
Two coffees, please. Do you want anything else, Edith?
Just you.
Huh?
I bought him tonight.
I don't get it.
Two coffees. Just two coffees, please.
Sure.
You're overwrought.
Why? Because I said I bought you. When will we get married, dear? Soon?
You should be home sleeping.
I suppose we will have to wait a little while for appearances' sake, but set a date, dear, now. Go ahead.
Please, the waiter.
Two coffees.
Next month, perhaps. In June.
Edith, please, let's discuss this whole thing tomorrow in the sunlight. When things are normal.
In July, then. Sometime in July.
I...
What's the matter, George?
I...
When, then? I can wait, darling. I've waited this long.
Let's get out of here.
No. No, George. I'm not going to move until you answer me, George. When are you going to marry me?
Never. I'm not going to marry you.
You're joking. Don't joke with me, George.
I'm not going to marry with you. Now, I don't want to tell you this now, but... Maybe it's better. Maybe the quicker we get things straight, the better.
Get things straight?
Please listen to me. Edith, you're a rich woman now. You've got a lot of money out of tonight. You got rid of him at a nice profit. So why not look at it as a good business deal and nothing else?
I don't understand.
A good business deal for both of us. We both took chances.
George, I don't...
I want half of what you inherit, the insurance and such, for my silence and my lies and my general help. I'm not in love with you, Edith. I never was. I needed the money.
There's someone else?
Yes.
There always was. Even while...
Yes.
Did you want to blackmail half of my money to finance you and someone else? A business deal. The whole thing was just a business deal.
Please.
That's very funny. Bob wouldn't give me a divorce, and even if he had, I'd have gotten no money.
and you and I would have needed money to live on. So I killed him. All that terror and all that blood for a business deal. A business deal. It's very funny. It's really very funny.
Are you okay?
I got out of there somehow and back to the apartment. Oh, I knew what I was going to do. I knew exactly what I was going to do. I took the little watch out of my handbag, the little pocket watch that George had loaned me so that everything would go right. Just right. The little watch with his initials on it and the inscription from his father. I held it in my hand a moment, listening. Then I set the hands back to 10 minutes of 11. The exact time. The time he died. The time I killed him. Then I put the little watch down on the floor and ground it under my foot. I picked it up and listened. It was stopped. Broken and stopped. Stopped at 10 minutes to 11. Lieutenant Milgram, please. Lieutenant, this is Edith Reed. I lied to you, Lieutenant. George did it. We planned it together. Why am I telling you? Guilty conscience, I suppose. Oh, you can prove it all right. I found his watch under a corner of the carpet. It was broken during the struggle. Yes, it had stopped. At 10 minutes to 11. Yes, that was the time. 10 minutes to 11. It's terrible to love someone as much as that. I wonder if the other one loved him that much. But he'll never know now. And I suppose he'll never forgive me. George will never forgive me.
Valley 103.1.
Sometimes it's hard to believe what a difference a single day can make in a man's life. Yes, or even less than that, an hour or even a minute, because fate can move in a split second. Take the case of Robert Bradley, for example. If you'd happen to wander into the Silver Dollar Buffet down on 3rd Street any afternoon prior to this September 1944, any afternoon during the racing season, you would have seen him there, a thin, pale, nervous young man with a handful of form charts and a cigarette hanging from the corner of his mouth. Yes, you would have seen Robert Bradley. You probably have forgotten him. That is, unless he owed you money, as he did most of the bookmakers in San Francisco. But at 11:44 on the night of September 6, 1944, fate turned the wheel. The steering wheel of an automobile speeding along the road which skirts the cliffs overlooking the sea, across the Golden Gate in Marin County. And in the space of a split second, Robert Bradley changed from a nobody into a somebody.
Hello.
Robert Bradley, please.
Speaking.
Sorry to disturb you, Mr. Bradley.
You ought to be. I was sound asleep.
This is Emery Todd, your Uncle Michael's lawyer. It's been a very serious accident.
What? Not Uncle Mike.
His son. Your cousin Gerald was killed about 5 hours ago and his car ran off a cliff in Marin County.
Jerry? No, you must be wrong.
I'm sorry to have to give it to you this way, Mr. Bradley. But it's essential that you appear at my office at 8 o'clock this morning. There are certain changes to be made in your uncle's will. And Gerald's death leaves you as sole heir.
Yes. If you'd seen Robert Bradley after the night of September 6th, you would have remembered him. You'd have recognized him, of course, from his picture, which appeared in the morning papers alongside that of Gerald, under the headline reading, Death of Gerald Bradley Leaves Cousin Heir to Fortune. It's a windfall, isn't it, Robert? And you can certainly use the money. But you seem rather unhappy about it there in Mr. Todd's office. Yes, you thought the world of Gerald, didn't you?
Mr. Todd, is it necessary that we do all this today? I'm hardly in the mood.
Of course, I understand how you feel, my boy. And I'm sorry. I was fond of Gerald, too. Your uncle's condition is extremely precarious.
Oh, nonsense. Uncle Michael lived to be 80.
That's precisely the point. I've just talked with Dr. Blaisdell. He gives your uncle a week.
Look, must you be so practical?
I'm afraid I must. Law is a very practical business, Robert. And you must remember we haven't much time. Now, my secretary has a few more papers here for you to sign.
Very well, Mr. Todd, let's get it over with. Good morning, Mr. Robert.
Oh, hello, Grain. I've come to see Uncle Mike.
He'll be happy to see you, sir. It's been so long, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, you haven't been a regular visitor here, sir.
Well, I will be from now on.
I might remark that it's very thoughtful of you, sir, now that Gerald's gone. It was an awful shock to the master, you know.
Yes, I know.
You'll find Miss Pritchard upstairs.
No, who's that?
The nurse, sir.
Oh, yes, of course. How do you do? I'm Robert Bradley.
Yes, Mr. Bradley.
How's Uncle Mike?
Dr. Blaisdell was here just an hour ago. It doesn't look so good, I'm afraid. The doctors can't understand what keeps him going.
And I can't understand why they told him about Gerald. He must have known it'd be too much for him.
There was some legal reason, I believe. Something about his estate.
Oh, yes, I've been through that once already. I want to see him.
I'm sorry, but Dr. Blaisdell left orders at nowhere.
I don't give a hang for Dr. Blaisdell's orders. He needs me, and I'm going to see him. Uncle Mike, it's Robert. It's Robert, Bobby.
Jerry, he's gone now. There's no one now except you, Robert.
You're going to be proud of me, just like you were of Jerry. And you're going to get well, Uncle Mike. You're going to get well.
I'm not going to get well.
Listen, there's not a man in Montgomery Street who'd say Mike Bradley couldn't get anything he really wanted.
That's all you need.
Don't you see? You've got to want to live.
It's more than that.
No, no, it isn't. It's all in your mind. You have me to remember that. And between us, we're going to live. No matter what the doctor says.
So Robert and old Michael are going to fight it out together. Yes, and it's just what Michael needs. Someone who cares about something besides that $2 million estate of his. It's not long after Robert deserts the buffet on 3rd Street for Michael's mansion in Hillsboro that the old man appears to pick up a little, to take more of an interest in life. Dr. Blaisdell is amazed.
Well, I can't understand it, Robert. I tell you, his heart's leaking like a fizz.
Oh, I knew we could do it.
But what have you done?
I've just given him a little confidence, that's all. I tell you, no one can fight when he's surrounded by a flock of lawyers waiting for him to kick off.
But his heart's gone. He can't last another week.
Oh, that's what you said 3 weeks ago.
Yes, I know.
Well, maybe you're right, Doctor. But I'm going to stay with him in his house until the end. As far as he knows, well, he's getting better. Understand?
Well, I must say I admire you, my boy.
Yeah.
Now, let me see. Here are a few things you ought to know, just in case the nurse off duty. Yes, here we are. Now, keep these pills handy, in case he has a critical attack.
All right.
But now, a word of warning, boy. They're extremely dangerous in excess of 3 grains. Particularly to a man in your uncle's condition. If he has a violent attack during the night, just give him 1 3-grain tablet, no more. The only thing that'll snap him out of it. More than 1 tablet is liable to carry him off.
I understand, Dr. Blaisdell. I'll see to it that everything...
Mr. Roberts, there's a Mr. Harris with the Associated Insurance Company on the telephone. Will I tell him to call back?
Yes. No, I'd better talk to him.
Excuse me, Doctor.
Yeah, all right, Bob. This is Robert Bradley speaking.
Mr. Harris, Mr. Bradley. There are a few points in your policy I think we better talk over.
Oh, I see.
Shall I come down, or...
No. Was it something about coverage?
Yeah. I'm afraid it's not going to protect you against all risks.
But you told me it was watertight.
Oh, something's come up this thing. The company is going to need an advance on that premium.
Oh, well, perhaps I'd better come up to San Francisco. We can meet for lunch today, say, in the lobby of the St. Francis.
That's fine, Mr. Bradley.
All right, I'll meet you in an hour.
Peculiar that Robert was so disturbed about a mere insurance policy. Maybe it was because it forced him to leave his beloved Uncle Mike's side for the first time since Gerald's unfortunate accident 3 weeks ago. He drives the 25 miles into San Francisco, and an hour later strolls casually into the crowded lobby of the St. Francis Hotel. He picks up a newspaper at the stand in the lobby, seats himself on the lounge in the center of the room, and opens his paper to read. Oddly enough, he's seated back to back with another man reading the paper.
I told you never to call me down there.
It's been 3 weeks. What are you doing, hiding out on me?
Got to stay there until he kicks off, understand?
That may be too late.
What do you mean?
They're beginning to wonder.
About what?
About what Jerry Bradley was doing in Marin County the night he had an appointment in Berkeley.
Well, that's your worry.
It's gonna be yours if I get much hotter.
What are you getting at?
$25,000.
Don't be stupid. There's nothing until he kicks off, understand?
There's gotta be something. There's gotta be. I gotta get out of town, I tell you, and that takes dough.
They can't suspect. They don't know a thing.
Seen him start this way before and end up in the green room at San Quentin. Just get me the dough, that's all. But fast.
Well, Robert, so your friend Mr. Harris, or should I say, Candy Monahan, is worried about your insurance coverage. It seems he couldn't foresee that it wouldn't cover a few suspicious minds on the homicide squad. And it didn't clear up a few questions about Jerry Bradley's death. Questions that didn't have answers. You watch the papers now very carefully, looking for a sign that the police suspected your windfall might have been proved artificially by your friend Candy for a fee of $25,000. And you began to wish you had let matters lie instead of ingratiating yourself so thoroughly with Uncle Mike. For didn't Dr. Blaisdell himself say you were responsible for prolonging his life? You're waiting for him to die now, almost openly, because Candy can't be put off much longer. And yet he continues to linger.
Here's your tea, Uncle Mike. I'm sorry I'm late with it. I was reading the paper, sort of forgot about the time.
Reading the paper, eh? Anything about Daryl?
Daryl? Yeah. Oh, of course not.
I just wondered. Wish you'd bring me the paper once in a while.
You know, Dr. Blaisdell thinks you ought to concentrate on getting well. You better stick to those magazines I brought you.
Wonderful what a cup of tea will do.
You're feeling better today, aren't you?
Oh, perhaps. A deal better than I did on the first day you came here, I can tell you.
Well, the doc can't understand how you've done it.
Can you?
What?
Understand how I've done it?
Well, I hope I've helped a little.
Why?
Well, what do you mean?
We may as well lay the cards on the table, Robert. You're quite aware of your position as my heir since Gerald's death. You didn't care a hang before that time. Since then, you've given up gambling and become a model nephew. Or should I say a model heir? Why?
Well, I thought you'd need me.
Nonsense. Robert, you may as well know that there's another alternative than making you sole heir.
What?
Don't jump, my boy. During the past few weeks, I've become intensely interested in a Mr. Woodford.
From Mr. Todd's office?
Mr. Todd sent him here. He's secretary of the Home for Crippled Children. A very worthy institution. Far worthier than you, I might add. Now take away the tea things and let me get some sleep, huh? After all, you're vitally interested in my constitution.
Poor Robert doesn't sleep much that night, lying there staring at the ceiling, thinking. It begins to look like the past might not be so rosy after all. That maybe at its end he'll find the little green room at San Quentin, with a very worthy charity, richer by $2 million. Something has to be done about it. Besides, the butler has just told you that the insurance man is waiting again to see you.
You fool. What are you doing here?
I had to. They were asking more questions.
Like what?
Like that whiskey bottle I planted in the car. You found a guy in Fort Lauderdale who sold it to me. I'm higher than a firecracker, I tell you. In 2 days, you understand it? It's 2 days to scram.
You're going off hat-cocked.
Now tell me what I'm doing. I know, see. This might make it if I beat it now, but it's a long chance.
Listen. 5 minutes after he kicks off, I'm good for $50,000 at any bucket shop in town, but not until. Give me one more day.
You've been handing me this now for months.
I'm going one way or the other tonight.
Get this, then. If I go down, you're going with me. If I have to use this.
Put that gun away.
Just remember that. We're both going over Niagara Falls in the same barrel.
Yes, Robert, there isn't much time. It's one way or the other tonight. And this thing that looks so easy is getting pretty complicated. With Uncle Mike acting so strangely, as if he suspected the truth about Gerald. The will. You've got to find out about the will. But how? Wait a minute. That pretty girl secretary in the lawyer's office who helped you fill out the papers. You might ask her out and... Yes, that's it.
Did I tell you? That's the way I
want
it.
Now. Just in a don't get excited.
But someone's on the line. You're about to hang up when you remember the extension upstairs in Michael's room.
But Mr. Brad,
We've been over the matter of your nephew before. It's all settled.
It's not all settled. I've just made my final decision.
Well, can't it wait until tomorrow?
It could, but it isn't going to. I have a feeling tomorrow may be too late.
Changing your will is a pretty important step, Mr. Bradley. Perhaps you should sleep on it.
I'm perfectly capable of handling my own affairs, Todd. I've been sleeping on it for 2 weeks.
What grounds do you have? How could you tell anything about the man in less than a month?
I've found out all I want to know. And I'm not arguing with you. I'm telling you.
Very well, Mr. Bradley. I'll be down in an hour.
There you are, Robert. Laid out for you on a silver platter. Wasn't just a hunt. Maybe Uncle Michael has seen you in the newspapers. Or maybe Green, that fishy-eyed butler. And in just 1 hour, you'll be a nobody again. Just another deadbeat with a flock of debt, trying to borrow a 2 spots to put down on the next race. Just 1 hour, Robert, unless... Unless Uncle Mike happened to die in that hour before Todd gets here. Yes. What about that? What about the little green room at San Quentin? Remember what Candy said about both of you going over Niagara in the same barrel? Yes. Uncle Mike must die, but how? Sit down, Robert. Sit down and think this one out clearly. Can't be any slips this time. Wait a minute. Those pills! That's it. The nurse is gone for the night. Just time for his tea, too. Couldn't be better. Where are the pills?
Oh, yes.
In the medicine cabinet. In the bathroom.
Uncle Mike, what are you doing out of bed?
I didn't want to bother you.
Bother me? Well, that's what I'm here for.
I wanted to drink.
Dr. Blazer would raise the roof. Here, let me help you.
I am a little weak, a little dizzy tonight.
Well, it serves you right, getting out of bed that way. There you are.
Thanks.
Now, how about some tea?
I don't know.
You just want to be cooked. Now, don't go away. I'll have for you 10 minutes.
So Robert goes downstairs to make the tea, stopping first to get the little box of pills out of the medicine chest in the bathroom. Now for the teacup. How many, Robert? The doctor says that one might be fatal. 2 ought to do it. Better make sure. Put in 3. That's 9 grains. The tea is stronger than usual tonight, so he won't taste it. And don't quite fill his teacup, so he'll be sure to drink it all. There. Now, back up to the bedroom. You still have 40 minutes to go, and there's plenty of time. 9 grains shouldn't take long, should they?
Here you are, Uncle Mike. Right out of the kettle. I'll set the tray here. Nothing like a hot cup of tea. Let you sleep like a baby. Maybe you'd better sit up, huh? Here, let me fix the pillow. Say, you can't go to sleep on me like that. That's what tea's for. Come on, I'll give you a hand. Uncle Mike.
He's dead! It couldn't be better. Almost too good to be true. Yes, almost as if he did it on purpose, just to tease you. Driving you almost frantic and then quietly dying all by himself at the very last minute. That was a windfall too, wasn't it, Robert? Now you hurry. Throw that cup of tea down the wash basin. Rinse out the cup and put it back so if the nurse told you bring it up, it'll be there. Then call Dr. Blaisdell quickly. Everyone must be here to see it. And to see that he did it by himself. It only takes the doctor a few minutes to get here and look at Uncle Mike.
Yes, come at last.
Did he cry out or anything?
Well, I didn't hear a thing, Doctor. I just came in to bring him some tea a few minutes ago and found him lying there quietly, but he'd fallen asleep.
Yes, that's just about what he did. I guess it's just as well.
Yeah.
He'll never know now about Gerald.
What do you mean?
You've seen tonight's papers?
No.
Gerald didn't die by accident, Robert. He was murdered.
What are you talking about?
Well, he was murdered in San Francisco by a man by the name of Monahan.
But I thought, Marin County.
Yes, yes, so did I. Monahan drove him there and pushed his car over the cliff.
This Monahan, he's, confessed?
Didn't get a chance to. He chose to shoot it out with the police in the San Francisco hotel.
Oh, I see.
That's all there is to it, Robert. Another windfall. You can't lose now. No one left to give it away. No loose ends. You can rest easy now. It was a close call, but there's nothing to worry about. Or is there? Next morning, as you're about to go out. Robert Bradley?
Yes.
That's Matt Waters. This gentleman, I think you know.
Oh, yes. Hello, Dr. Blaisdell.
Good morning, Robert. I think you'd better come along with that.
What for? I don't understand.
You're under arrest on suspicion of murder.
But...
there's no use denying it now, Robert. You see, I'm the one who found the evidence.
Evidence? Oh, I don't understand. How could you? I
realized right away that your uncle had died from the effect of poison. I wondered if it might have been the tea you brought. The cup had been washed clean. But a few drops had spilled on the saucer. Just a few drops you didn't notice. But it was enough. When analyzed, it showed the presence of the drug.
But he didn't drink the tea.
He died of the poison. And when I looked for the pills I gave you, I found that six of them were missing. You didn't have to use six. Three would have been enough.
But I didn't. I only put in three. I saw him earlier in the bathroom. Must have taken the other three himself. That's what killed him. He didn't drink the tea. He didn't. I didn't kill him. I wanted him. I intended. But he was already dead.
I doubt if the jury will believe that. Come on, son, let's go. And so the little green room at San Quentin lay at the end of the path after all. Robert found lots of time to think during the next few months. To think about what might have happened if he hadn't decided to brew that cup of tea for Uncle Mike. He was a pretty good prisoner, almost to the last, when he heard something that started him talking to himself, staring wild-eyed at the warden who brought his food, shrieking out in the middle of the night. He discovered, you see, that Uncle Mike had disinherited him on the third day after Gerald's death. That those few weeks of kindness had finally changed his mind, and that he had called Mr. Todd on the night he died to reinstate Robert as his only heir.
A tree in the meadow where the stream drifting by and carved upon that tree I see I love you till I die I shall always remember the love in your eyes, the day you carved upon that tree. I love you till I die.
But further on, down Lover's Lane,
silhouette I see. I know you're kissing someone else. I wish that it were me.
By that tree in the meadow, my thoughts always lie, and where'er you go, you'll always know I love you till I die. But further on down Lover's Lane, a silhouette I see. I know you're kissing someone else. I wish that it were me. By that tree
in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.